John Moskow, a member of the A Correction Team. I'm also a member of the Northern New Jersey Sanctuary Coalition, an organization that works with asylum seekers. I'm excited to speak today with Kathy O'Leary about the recent events at the ICE Detention Center at Delaney Hall in Newark, which have been in the news a lot, and about some of the history of detention in New Jersey. Kathy O'Leary is New Jersey Regional Coordinator for Pax Christi USA, as well as an Ambassador of Peace for Pax Christi USA. Welcome, Kathy.
Thanks, John.
And we're going to be starting to talk about what's been happening recently at Delaney Hall, the new, controversially opened ICE Detention Center in Newark, and about the ICE detention system more generally. So, Kathy, you've been working around ICE detention since before there was an ICE, I believe. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the history in New Jersey and how we got to where we are now?
Yeah, I haven't been here quite that long. I have been working on this issue for a little over 18 years and doing a lot of research on the private companies that have been cashing in on, you know, what they consider it is a growth industry for private prisons and how that intersects with the local governments here and their own contracts with ICE. So where do I begin? So New Jersey's, you know, at the forefront of a lot of things. I like to refer to us as the neoliberal incubator. And ICE detention is one of those things that we were on the forefront of. We've had ICE detention facilities since before ICE existed. They were contracted with INS, and that's the Elizabeth Detention Center. And folks who follow ICE detention.
And INS is Immigration and Naturalization Service?
Yes, INS is Immigration and Naturalization Service, yes. So folks who follow ICE detention generally are familiar with the Elizabeth Detention Center. It's gotten into the culture of the United States in a way that the other facilities haven't. I mean, there's movies and plays that have been inspired by folks visiting there or having been detained there. But, you know, it started as a place where we locked up asylum seekers, which was something that folks who belonged to faith-based communities found particularly repugnant. But before the faith-based communities found Elizabeth, people were being detained there and people were advocating for themselves. There were asylum seekers primarily from African countries who were fleeing violence in Sierra Leone, or women who are fleeing forced female genital mutilation, who are coming to our shores and saying, you know, please live up to your promise as the country that protects people. And it was our policy at the time to lock them up. And they went to a company that had actually run hotels previous to this and said, hey, you know, why don't you start detaining people? And they found a warehouse in the Port District of Elizabeth and hastily converted it to a jail. Not surprisingly, this was a horrible experience for everyone inside. They were abused physically, emotionally, denied sanitary conditions, denied healthy food. And they had an uprising and destroyed the inside of the jail of the detention facility.
And when was this? And what was the company?
This was in 1994. The company was named Esmore. And that's when everybody found out that this place existed, when the people who were inside, when their cries got out. And it was then, actually, that people from the community started really paying attention to what was going on. Then when it reopened, sadly, with the permission of the mayor, who's still the mayor of Elizabeth, that was when people started providing services to people inside. They were also thrown out because they were told that they were providing people too much hope. So we've known since the mid-90s that cruelty is the point of immigration detention, that the idea is to lock people up so that they will give up on their cases. and just go home or go somewhere else. We don't really care. Our government doesn't care. So the roots of what, or the seeds for what's happening now, go back decades. And it's a bipartisan issue.
So people talk about detention, and places like Elizabeth and Delaney Hall are called detention centers. Is there an essential difference between detention and being in jail, being incarcerated in the prison system?
Lawyers will tell you yes. I don't know that people who are in, who've been in both criminal lockup and ICE detention will tell you that there's a lot of difference. One of the biggest differences is when you're in ICE detention, you never know when you're getting out because it's not like when you're sentenced to criminal punishment. You know, I have this many days or this many years, whatever it is, to serve on my sentence. I can do these things to reduce my sentence. These are the rules. If I follow the rules, this is, I'll get out in this amount of time. None of that is the case in immigration detention. People can be in ICE detention for years with no knowing when they possibly can be let free, other than if they accept deportation. And for some people, that's just not an option. So yeah, I think that's probably the biggest difference between the two. It's really just that completely demoralizing aspect of, and it's I think a form of torture. In fact, I think the UN does classify it as indefinite detention as a form of torture.
There have been in New Jersey, certainly, both public and private detention centers. Can you talk a little bit about that history?
Yeah, and they kind of, the Elizabeth Detention Center was at the forefront, as I said before, but it wasn't long after that the county jails in New Jersey and county jails across the country were contracting with Immigration Customs Enforcement. Actually, some of those contracts do also date back to INS. And there's the differences from an advocacy standpoint are that private detention facilities are not subject to public records requests. So there's a lack of transparency with private prisons. But they're both making money off of the incarceration of people. And they're in New Jersey, or our experience in New Jersey was that having your local governments invested in ICE detention then made it harder for us to advocate on the federal level. How can you advocate on the federal level for detention reform, for immigration reform, when the county jails now are profiting handsomely from this practice? In New Jersey, which people consider a progressive state, and I wouldn't really argue with that label, we've done an awful lot of stuff to get rid of our cages, right? We have reduced the number of people in who are being incarcerated on a daily basis. We have passed bail reform. We have passed other laws which reduce the number of people who are being incarcerated, including the drug court laws and such. But that creates, that leaves behind the infrastructure, that carceral infrastructure. And unless that carceral infrastructure is torn down or converted to another purpose, then it's just going to be reused for another carceral purpose. So I think that's something that we've learned in New Jersey. It's not that we just need to remove people from prison with the policies that we pass, but we also need to dismantle the prisons themselves physically. And then, like I said, whether that's tearing them down or converting them to another purpose where they cannot be repurposed as a jail is really important.
New Jersey did close down the detention centers that were in public jails a few years ago. Is that correct?
Yes. So we closed down the ICE. We were able to end the ICE contracts in the county jails, largely through a bill that was finally passed. We call it the Anti-ICE Detention Law. It's also called AB 5207. But it says that no entity can either enter into a new contract with ICE, and they cannot renew an old contract with ICE. Now, that's since been challenged at the district court, where the private prisons, CoreCivic, and then GEO later, were provided relief. So they are excluded from that law. But the county jails all did give up their contracts. But what we saw was a consolidation of prisons. So Union County, and this is how Essex County, which had the largest ICE contract, they were willing to give up their ICE contract because they got a contract from Union County to when Union County decided to shut down their jail, they're going to send their folks all to Essex County. Now, the Union County jail is now vacant, and we understand that both the private prison companies and Immigration and Customs Enforcement are negotiating with Union County to purchase that jail for an ICE detention facility. While the county jails have given up their ICE contracts, they are still incarcerating people for money. So that still exists. It's a step in the right direction because there is more transparency and less abuse in while there's abuse is still rampant, there's less abuse in and more oversight of people who are in criminal incarceration. But the idea of inserting profit into the custody and care of people is something that never works out well.
So, as I understand it, President Biden had promised to end private prisons on taking office, and that he did this in the criminal justice system, but exempted or excluded detention centers. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was actually a major campaign promise that he was going to completely eliminate the use of private for-profit prisons at the federal level. And then, as you said, when he took office and it was within 10 days of his inauguration, he did issue this executive order, but it only applied to criminal incarceration and not ICE detention. And one of the reasons for that is that it really didn't make it wasn't that much of a change for the Board of Prisons. It was a handful of jails that they were using on the federal level that were private for criminal incarceration. And what we saw after that was those same jails were converted to ICE detention. So Moshannon Valley, which is about an hour north of State College, Pennsylvania, so in the middle of nowhere, which was a facility that was a, it was a it was a prison, was within a few months or a year, was converted to an ICE detention facility. And people are transferred there all the time, and it's very difficult for anyone to get there. But it shows the just this revolving door of not just of people that we talk about a lot about, but there's a revolving door when it comes to the facilities too.
So at this point, I know that GEO challenged the applicability of New Jersey's law banning detention centers on the grounds that it was a private company having a contract with the federal government, and that the federal government overrides states in terms of immigration policy. And the Biden administration, and now, of course, the Trump administration, sided with CoreCivic. And New Jersey is challenging that, although the district level court ruled in favor of CoreCivic. Where does that stand now?
Well, we just had oral argument on May 1st at the Third Circuit level, which is one level below the Supreme Court. And it was a 2-hour and 15-minute, just about, long argument, which is really unusual for it to be that long. It was a really intense question and discussion back and forth about a whole lot of legal issues that are out of my depth to explain. But it did sound like two of the justices were concerned about taking away the ability of states to regulate regulate for health and safety, which is what the crux of the New Jersey law is about, whether or not the states still have the right to enforce their local regulations when it comes to health and safety for facilities and for federal contractors. There is basis in the law that should be the case, but we'll see how this turns out. What will happen though is, if we are successful, it will create a split in the circuits. So the Ninth Circuit has ruled against a similar law in California. I mean, there's significant differences, but it was a similar law limiting ICE detention. So when there's a split in the circuits, it's more likely for it to be taken up by the Supreme Court. This could be a very interesting few years, seeing how this might turn out, and how the U.S. Supreme Court will look at this, because this is really the argument that New Jersey's making is actually a states' rights argument. So it's, you know, this is something that conservatives have used for many, many years to argue for all kinds of conservative causes. So we'll see how this shakes out as it goes forward.
So that New Jersey is arguing that even though the federal government has control over immigration, that it has the right to protect and look after the health and safety and welfare of everybody in New Jersey, even people who are in private detention centers that are under contract with the federal government. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that's kind of the crux of the conflict between Newark and GEO when it came to Delaney Hall. The city of Newark was trying to enforce its zoning and health and safety codes, and trying to make sure that those were all met prior to the facility opening. And that's why, you know, Mayor Baraka was on Delaney Hall's property on May 9th, and also at the invitation of the Congresswomen, Bonnie Watson Coleman, LaMonica McIver, and Rob Menendez, Congressman Rob Menendez, who are trying to do an inspection. And he was subsequently, as I think a lot of people have heard, subsequently, quote unquote, arrested. And I put scare quotes around arrested because ICE really has no authority over U.S. citizens. So, and certainly has no authority over trespassing laws, which is what they claim to have charged Mayor Baraka with. So, yeah, there is this legal argument teeing up in this, about whether or not ICE detention facilities are subject to local regulations. And it has long been established that federal contractors still are subject to local health and safety laws. So we'll see how this turns out.
So most people probably had never heard of Delaney Hall until the last few months. Can you talk a little bit about the history of Delaney Hall?
Yeah, Delaney Hall is you know, what people would call a halfway house, what they like to call themselves is a halfway house. But halfway houses in New Jersey are not what, and across the country too, are not what people used to think of, where it was, you know, a few dozen people living in a closely supervised unit of some sort. They've now turned into mini prisons. So Delaney Hall is a 1,000-bed facility. It was built about the same time that the Essex County Jail was built. The Essex County Jail was moved to this industrial part of Newark in the early 2000s. And it was moved there because their jail was in very poor shape and was under a federal consent decree. They wanted to, one of the things that Essex County wanted to do was to ensure that they never fell under that decree ever again once they got out from under it. And overcrowding was an issue, was a concern at the time. So Delaney Hall was built, like I said, immediately next to the jail. And from its outset, it was used as overflow for the jail. So people will be moved out from the Essex County Jail into Delaney Hall, not just to alleviate overcrowding, but also to allow Essex County to then rent out its beds to the Federal Marshal Service or to Immigration Naturalization Service and then ICE. In 2010-11, the Obama administration, after promising that they would reform immigration detention, that they would start building facilities that were quote unquote more humane, claiming that they would be repurposing old hotels and nursing homes, their first contract after for a new ICE facility after Obama was elected was the Essex County Jail and Delaney Hall. The contract was the largest in New Jersey at the time for 1,200 beds. So Essex County maintained the contract, but would use what was then called community education centers, another private for-profit prison. They would use the community education center's facility to place people in ICE detention and then have some people in the jail as well. After a dispute over prevailing wage, where it was clear that Delaney Hall was not offering prevailing wage. And at this point, it had been community education centers had been bought out by GEO Group. But rather than pay prevailing wage, what Essex County did was just pull everybody into the jail and detained everyone pursuant to their ICE contract in the jail. Delaney Hall continued with contracts with Essex County, with Union County, with other counties in the state for various things, including court-ordered drug rehabilitation and parole violations, people who violated the parole. It's called the halfway back program that didn't go all the way back to jail. They just went to the halfway house for a period of time. So those kinds of contracts continued until about 2022, 2023, when all of the jails, all of the counties stopped sending folks to the GEO Group facility for various reasons. And then it was vacant for a number of years until it was announced, and as you said, John, under the Biden administration, that it was under consideration for an ICE contract. It seems that no matter who won the election, that Delaney Hall would have opened as an ICE detention facility.
So what, just to sort of recap what's been happening in the last couple of months, what has the sequence been since the Trump administration announced that it was signing the contract with the GEO Group?
Yeah, so even since before as soon as we found out that Delaney Hall was on a list for potentially for opening as an ICE detention facility, folks started getting organized and talking to our legislators, including Mayor Baraka and the folks in Newark, and they weren't they were not happy about having an ICE detention facility in their city as either. So they were working with us to let us know where there might be opportunities for us to intervene in terms of the process. There was some expectation that they might have to go before the planning board or the zoning board, that there were permits that they were going to need. But the folks at GEO just completely skipped over all of that and did renovations to inside the building We don't know what renovations were done, but they did renovations to inside and outside the building, got no permits, did not get a new certificate of occupancy, and just said, "We're opening," and too bad. And they continue to try to muddy the waters between where their role was and where ICE's role was. So that whenever you would say, whenever anybody would say, "Well, you need to do X, Y, or Z," they would say, "Talk to ICE," even though that was their building when they had control over the building. So yeah, we've been trying to work those angles in terms of, really the kind of boring stuff, zoning and land use law, to see if there's any was any opportunity to slow down the process anyhow. And unfortunately, the GEO Group just plowed ahead and opened anyhow on May 1st. They started gearing up, and then we had confirmed by that following Monday that they actually did have people in the building. And what's been happening outside of Delaney Hall is that the community has come together and started an almost daily vigil outside of Delaney Hall to watch what's happening, because we can't rely on a GEO Group reporting honestly about what's going on. We certainly can't rely on ICE reporting honestly on what's going on there either.
When you say the community, could you talk a little bit about what that's meant in terms of the reaction to what's happening at Delaney Hall?
Yeah, so it was actually just started by the vigil started by a woman who lives just outside of Newark, but lived in Newark for many years. And she said, "We need to go watch. We need to go see what's going on." And she started going at the end of April, every morning from 6:30 to 8:30. That was when the employees were coming in, and she engaged them in conversations and find out what was going on. She was hoping to talk to them about maybe finding another job, convincing them it's not the best use of their labor. And then it grew to a couple of people. More groups got involved. Pax Christi came in. New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice, Make the Road, COSECHA. So immigrant rights groups, and then faith-based groups, community organizations, Ironbound Community Corp, other organizations from the community. So we started from 6:30 to 8:30 for an entire week, while they were still, while Newark was still trying to get in to make its inspections of the building, which were being denied. And then the focus shifted when people started being housed there to meeting the people who were going in to visit and talking to them and helping them advocate when the guards would arbitrarily shut down visitation, and helping them find the website where the visiting hours were, and directing them to organizations in the community that would provide visitation or free or low cost. So yeah, it's grown into a bit of a ministry for the people who are going to visit folks inside.
And as I understand it, as of right now, you, in fact, I think, played a major role in setting up kind of an anchor system where organizations, the ones you mentioned, First Friends, Northern New Jersey Sanctuary Coalition, I think Democratic Socialists of America, and if there are other groups, you should mention them, but where groups are taking on responsibility for anchoring at least a couple of hours a day so that there's a presence every single weekday. Is that basically correct?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. And it's like almost too many groups to mention. What there's Resistencia, First Friends, there's the New Jersey Palestinian Solidarity Coalition was there. So it's and we've had so many groups that only a couple have even repeated their time there. This afternoon, the Interfaith Center for New York is bringing clergy to do a prayer vigil outside. So yeah, everybody takes a 2 hour time slot whenever they can come. We encourage people to choose a time slot that is when visitors will be there. But there's benefit to being there other times as well. We have witnessed the vans leaving and coming back to the facility after going to either drop people off or pick people up from Newark Airport. We actually have video of guards counting out the sets of shackles that they need for the people that they're picking up at the airport, which is, it's important that these things don't happen in the dark, that we are there to see what's happening to our neighbors, that we are there to report this information out. We shouldn't be okay with what's going on there. We shouldn't be okay with mass deportation. We shouldn't be okay with locking people up for profit. We shouldn't be okay with ethnic cleansing, which is what we're dealing with. We shouldn't be okay with disappearing people. If all that I can do right now, if all that we can do right now is raise the alarm, to yell as loud as we can, to tell people to come and see what's going on. That's what we're going to do.
Going back just for a moment to Mayor Baraka's arrest, as I understand it, the charges have been dropped against him. But in turn, the Trump administration is now charging one of the congresswomen with having attacked ICE officials. What's the status of that?
Yeah, just for people who aren't aware, Roz Baraka is a black man. LaMonica McIver, who's now being charged as a black woman. The people that they surround that ICE surrounded that day when they swarmed outside of the facility to take Roz Baraka into custody, the people that they swarmed and surrounded were two black congresswomen and the black mayor. The Rob Menendez, who, while he's Latino, he passes as white, was left on the outside of that scrum. The other thing that people should understand from that, LaMonica McIver is being charged with assaulting the ICE officers. What people have not seen are the videos of the ICE officers masked and carrying automatic rifles. There was an ICE officer directly behind LaMonica McIver with both of his hands on his automatic rifle, shoving LaMonica McIver that day when they're now charging her with assault. After that event happened, and then there was also a group of clergy, 50 of them, who came and did civil disobedience outside the facility to protest that action by ICE. Immediately after that, ICE brought in militarized vehicles. They had an armored troop carrier there every day in the parking lot. They had as many as 20 armed ICE officers with body armor, helmets, automatic rifles with laser sights, extended magazines, and we're told between 60 and 90 rounds of ammunition. Also wearing zip ties on the front of their uniforms. So the threat of violence from ICE to the community is tremendous. And even the media was picking up on how ridiculous a show of force this was. These days we had primarily 60 something plus year old women, and a dozen or so of them standing out with signs nowhere near the gate. And this was the show of force that they were making. There was a New Jersey Advance Media called them the nice old ladies and questioned why they needed all this military gear for these nice old ladies. But I mean, it was important to show that contrast for us to be there with just our signs. We didn't even have a bullhorn, but to be there and to have the state display that kind of threat of aggression against us, you have to wonder if they're willing to do that in public, what are they doing to people inside, and what are they doing in the neighborhood? And that the other thing that we considered a success was that because they were there watching us with all that military gear, they were not in the neighborhoods then.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Kathy O'Leary. New Jersey Regional Coordinator for Pax Christi USA and Ambassador of Peace for Pax Christi USA. Thank you for talking with us.
Thanks, John, so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.